Hello, this is Gary Naylor. I want to share a very intimate story with you today, a very important one. But before I do, let me lay some information down and prepare for that story. I'm recording this podcast in the first week of December 2016. It was 1 year ago that I was traveling across Africa, Kenya, Africa, teaching for the first time in large groups the truth concerning the bride. Frankly, I was quite surprised at the receptivity. In fact, in the 3 months that I was there, the only two pastors whom I taught pastors and bishops, the only two pastors that objected, actually 2 days later called Caleb and said, you know, he is right. So I can say with confidence that of the 1,200 pastors and bishops that I taught while I was there, they all, without exception, understood and believed. That was the response we had. When I left Africa, I thought, boy, I hope the seed remains. But to my amazement, the seed not only remained, but the seed brought forth much, much growth. When I was there, I taught pastors and bishops from Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda. I can tell you today that almost every nation across the continent of Africa, south of the Sahara Desert, has heard Bride Truth. You can go to rentitbride.com, of course, and look at the Africa map, and you can see how extensive the teachings have gone out, and they continue to this day. In fact, they are so extensive that the only problem we have is having the funds that equip us and enable us to go to all of the invitations and requests. It's absolutely incredible. It's not just the teachings from the gentleman that I started with when I was in Africa, but it has gone to many, many others who are now going out and teaching. It is truly amazing. In fact, what is said there is that they have never seen anything like this before. It's very encouraging. And one of the unique things about this is it's not just Christians who are receiving it. I had Muslims and different groups with me whenever I was there. But we're talking about a large number of Muslims. In fact, Walter, I know, has gone to one meeting where it was nothing but Muslims. But it is a very broad, across-the-board acceptance of this truth, and they're very encouraged by it, Christians and Muslims alike. I asked Walter, what do you teach the Muslims? And he said, well, it's real simple. I say Christianity is a failure. But they don't have any problems with that, and neither do the Christians, because they know it. It is a failure, folks. And then he adds that the Muslims are failures. Well, they don't have any problems with that either. They see the abuses of it and the error. And so it has brought about an opportunity for teaching that it really is like none other. In fact, I want to share something with you. We had shared these teachings with people all over Africa, Madagascar, and on other islands outside of the Africa continent itself. But we had never gone north of the Sahara Desert. Of course, north of the Sahara Desert are primarily your Arabs, your Arab people. And I didn't think that we would go across there anytime soon. But we got an invitation. Some people who had attended another teaching had gone up into Cairo and had met with the gentleman there, and they contacted me and said, we would like someone to come and teach us these things because we're hearing about them. When I heard this, I was very excited in my spirit about the possibility here for several reasons, and I will be addressing those. But I received an email from the gentleman in Cairo, and I'm going to read for you what he said. He was talking about these teachings, and he said, we need someone like you to change this world to a better place for all of us. Wow. This gentleman tries to get Christians and Muslims together to be at peace all across North Africa. And so we made provision for a bride brother to go up into Cairo. They flew him there to go into Cairo and to present the bride truth. And we brought DVDs and tracks as well. So you ask, what happened? The bride brother was there to teach, and before he could even get started, some youth from the Muslim Brotherhood came to the hotel and disrupted the meeting. They ended up beating the gentleman who organized it, and the police escorted our bride brother to the airport, and he flew back home. Needless to say, that was very disappointing. But it brought up a question clearly laid out in his email to me. He said, we need someone like you to change this world to a better place for all of us. Frankly, that is the challenge of the bride. You see, bride is unique. We are not Christians. We're not Muslims. And we see that both groups have failed, and that Yahweh is going to have to do something that's going to bring Emmanuel back to this earth and to bring peace among all mankind. Frankly, brothers and sisters, whether you're a Muslim brother and sister or you're a Christian brother and sister, Yahweh God needs to do something to stop this mess. Look, Christians had their crusades. My oldest daughter, Christy, was in Turkey for several months working there, and the Muslims there do not like Christians because of the Crusades. They will bring that up every time. But I challenge you as Muslims, look at the violence that we are seeing from the Muslims. I will freely admit to you that the Crusades were horrific. But if we're going to call the Crusades horrific, let's recognize that this matter of trying to take the kingdom by force is not only not going to accomplish it, but it is actually counter to the whole principle of bringing the kingdom of heaven to this earth. Do you see that? How can violence bring a kingdom of peace to mankind? Whether it be the Crusades or whether it be the Muslim Brotherhood. How can peace come from violence? You say, well, we'll enforce it. That's not peace. What kind of peace is that, that you enforce control over the people? It's certainly not liberty. And so this Muslim brother, who was Arabic, he had something very important to say. We need someone like you to change this world to a better place for all of us. And whenever we've been in our meetings, from what Walter and Caleb have said, they recognize it. Christianity is a failure. Muslims are a failure. We need to have something else. I asked Walter about this, and he related to me what others are saying here again. He said they see the bride as a bridge between the two groups. It's very true. It is a bridge between the two. We're not Christians. We're not Muslims. And unlike a lot of Christians, you see, I know that Muslims are my brothers and sisters. You see, Christians would take offense to that, but why should they? There's Ishmael and there's Isaac. There were promises to Ishmael, who had 12 sons. There were promises to Isaac, and through Jacob, he had 12 sons. Yahweh God is the God of both groups. You actually have four groups. You have Jews, who are in Jerusalem, you know, of course, spread throughout the earth. You have Christians. You have Muslims. And now we have a bride. Those are the four groups that have this one thing in common. We all look to the one true God, the one single deity, Yahweh God. Here's a challenge that I want to present to you today. Who is right? We can't all be right within Christianity. Caleb contacted me initially over a year ago and said, I read Why I'm No Longer Christian, and I was going to reply to you, and I was going to tell you where you're wrong and correct you. And when I read the writing, Why I'm No Longer a Christian, I realized he's right. Folks, Caleb looked at the church and he knew that nobody agreed, yet everybody was saying that they were right. He asked himself the question, well, maybe I'm wrong. When you've got so many religions, who is right? You can't all be right. There has to be one right. Here's my challenge, and we will see how far it goes. In the scriptures, in the Old Testament, Elijah went up on Carmel, and there was going to be a test between the prophets of Baal and Elijah. Now, the test was, who is the one true God? And so Elijah gave the prophets of Baal all day long to prove that their God was God. And they made an offering, and their God was to come down and consume the offering with fire and accept it. They did it all day long. It didn't work. Then Elijah, and I'll make it brief, he built an altar. Yahweh God came down and consumed the offering and the altar and all the water. Yes, I know. After that, the prophets of Baal were killed once it was proven who served the one true God. Here's what I'd like to challenge you with. Christians aren't out killing Muslims except to defend themselves in battle. I would like to challenge you as Muslims. Why don't you wait a year? I know this is so simple, you're going to say, that will never happen. We'll just wait and see what Yahweh does. I want you to wait and put away your violence, and let's see who the one true God is, just like the prophets of Baal and Elijah did. I would challenge you to put away your violence, and let's just see who is Yahweh God, who is the one true God. There are some things that encourage me to go forward with this challenge, that Yahweh God could actually be doing something here. Number one was the meeting in Cairo that was set up, and that really stimulated, prompted this whole thought of a union between the two, which was going very well and continues to go very well in Africa, south of the Sahara Desert. And then, of course, the second thing that encourages me is, in fact, yes, the joint meetings of Muslims and Christians in the southern part of Africa. And I'm talking about south of the desert. We get together. There is no problem. We get together and we talk. We learn. And frankly, that's what the test of Carmel should be for us today, is to not fight, not battle, not argue, just talk. Present the truth, see what's going to happen, and let's leave it in the hands of God. Again, you don't take the kingdom by force. You don't come and bring violence to bring a kingdom of peace. And again, the brother said, we need someone like you to change this world to a better place for all of us. That is, in fact, the goal that I have in the bride. In fact, other than the Jews, let's set them aside because they're unique. But you take these three. You take Muslims, Christians, and bride. Muslims are trying to take the kingdom by force with wrath. Christians think that God is going to judge people with wrath. Bride, no wrath. God is going to have mercy on man. He will place his wrath on the one who has caused all the trouble, all the conflict, all the confusion, all the deception, and all the death to this day, and he is called the devil. He is the God and ruler of this world. And just as the king of Babylon, Belshazzar, was killed when the Medes and the Persians came in, though it was prophesied that the Medes and Persians would utterly, utterly, utterly destroy Babylon, Yahweh God had mercy. He did not destroy Babylon, even as he prophesied in Isaiah and Jeremiah over and over. He had mercy. And who died that night? Only one, folks. Satan, Belshazzar. Yahweh God is going to hold Satan accountable for all the chaos and the corruption and death on this earth for 2,000 years and even six. We don't need to be fighting each other. We don't need to be killing each other. All we're doing by doing that is agreeing with the devil. He is a being of violence, and we don't need it. If we want a kingdom of peace, you don't take it by force. You take it through peace. Come, let us reason together. Put aside the guns. And I hope that this message that's going to be spoken in one small place right now will resonate throughout the world. Put away your guns. Let's see what God is going to do. They did not go up on Carmel to have a battle. They went up there and let God decide who it was who was pleasing to him. Let's let him decide. The second point is bride teachings are the one consistent teachings that unites Muslim and Christian together as your Ishmael and Isaac. But there's a third thing in my life that encourages me to speak out against this and go in this direction. And that is a couple of years ago, it could even be three, in Saudi Arabia. There's a man who's the chairman of an English department at a university in Saudi Arabia. He's the chairman. He read The Curse of 1920, a book that I wrote several years ago. And it has to do with the three-pronged curse of feminism, women's rights movement, etc., corrupt music, and abortion and euthanasia. He read that, and he was so moved by it as a Muslim. He was so moved by it, he contacted me and he said, may I have the rights to translate this book into Arabic? I said, sure, most definitely. We worked up a contract to make sure that the book would be preserved the way I wrote it. He had no problems with it. He's the chairman of an English department. And I said, are you going to get your students to help you? He said, oh, no, no. He said, this book is too important, too critical to allow the students to do this. He said, I will translate this book personally myself. It took him 2 years to translate the book. Right now, the translated book has been turned over to the Ministry of Information in Saudi Arabia. It has to be licensed through the government. And so we're waiting to see if we're going to get that license. With that license, then he can then print the book and it will be distributed. So The Curse of 1920 will be in Arabic. So you see, not only did Yahweh open the door for The Curse of 1920 to go into the Arabic language, and not only does Yahweh unite people in Africa, south of the Sahara Desert, he unites Muslims and Christians alike into one common hope. And not only did we have this invitation to Cairo? And yes, it was a disappointment. but it did go across the border into the northern part of Africa. And this man there who was hurt, but he's fine, he's going to recover. I'm hoping that in all of this, Yahweh God is truly going to do something to unite Muslims and Christians alike. One of the things that encourages me is the fact that when Solomon's temple was built, and Solomon's temple is a type of the kingdom of heaven, because Solomon was supposed to have a throne that endured forever, and it was a glory to Yahweh, and Yahweh God's presence actually came into their midst. Do you know that that tabernacle, that temple, was built by the Arabs as well? Yes. The religion of the Muslims today is based on the Arabs. And so with these things, it gives great hope that Yahweh God is going to do something, and that we will have the King of Peace come back, and he will rule, and he will establish and confirm all truth. Let me point out something that is alike between Christianity and Muslims. In general, is what I'm speaking of here, because every person's different. But let's speak in general. And what I'm going to share with you is completely different from Bride. You see, you got two things going here. Both groups look for God to carry out wrath on the people and destroy them. The Muslims are trying to take the kingdom by force with violence. You will never establish the kingdom of Allah, the kingdom of God, with violence. You will not do it. You tell me that the Muslims today have a victorious kingdom through violence? No. All you do is cause people tremendous suffering and harm. It is hell on earth. On the other hand, Christians wait for God to come back and bring violence and wrath as well when they look at the book of Revelation. And they're living in darkness as well, in blindness. The God of this world has blinded both of them. And they also believe that when they die, they go to heaven or paradise in regard to the Muslims, where the men get 72 virgins. Let me tell you, gentlemen, if you're waiting for your 72 virgins in paradise, you will never get them any more than Christians are going to go to heaven and live in an immortal, incorruptible body. I've got news for both of you. After you die, you go to sleep. And then there is the judgment in which you are brought before the Son of God, and he will judge everything you do. You say, well, as Muslims, we don't believe that. That's not going to change whether it's going to happen or not. It doesn't matter whether you believe it or not. It's a throw of the dice for you. If you think you're going to live in paradise for killing people, no, when you come back, you will be held accountable for all the death and the agony and the adultery that you've created. You see, this is the seventh day. This is the Sabbath rest. The God of this world, Satan, is against it. But the God who rules over Satan and who will rule this earth in the seventh day, Yeshua, there will be no violence. There will be correction, but it will be a kingdom of peace. I warn you, Muslims, and Christians. Christians' crusades are over with. They're in the past. The Muslims have their own crusades now. They're both works of violence. Christians did not establish the kingdom of heaven on this earth through violence, and the Muslims are not going to accomplish it either. Paul said, "You reap what you sow." Well, in the Quran, it says the same thing. If you do good, you do good to yourselves. If you do evil, you do evil to yourselves. It's chapter 17, verse 7. Brothers and sisters in the Muslim world, in the Muslim faith, if you do good, you will do good for yourselves. But if you do evil by killing and causing suffering and heartache and sorrow to others, you will reap what you sow. You will do evil to yourselves. It's just a matter of time. There are some remarkable similarities between Bride Truth and the Muslims. I talked about them in the last podcast, titled The Bride and Overcoming Death. I mentioned the Kaaba, the cube, at Mecca. And you see that testified as well in the book of Revelation, where the bride comes out of heaven and it is a cube. I also find it most interesting that Muslims are looking for the coming of the 12th Imam. And the brothers have taught this when amongst the Muslims. The 12th Imam, of course, it varies from group to group, but the 12th Imam is one who's going to bring forth a change. For some, they think it's a dramatic change of violence or through violence. And he's supposed to come with Yeshua. Well, those are very much so what Bride believes. But it's not going to turn out the way you think. Again, let's look at this test of Carmel. Who's right? Is the Kaaba a fulfillment? Do you have your 12th Imam yet? Is he going to bring what you think? Or is it going to be a bride who comes out of heaven and rules and reigns with Yeshua? And is the 12th Imam actually the 12th apostle that I write about throughout all the Remnant Bride writings? The 12th apostle is the office that started in Judas Iscariot. It went through Satan, and it goes to a man today, the Elijah. It's the same things that we see with Moses. I would love to have gone to Cairo and to looked at where Moses was. But it's the same thing that was shown to Moses. He said, "What do you have in your hand?" He had a rod. He said, "Cast it down on the earth." He cast it down on the earth, and it turned into a serpent. Then he told him to pick it up by the tail. He reached down and picked it up by the tail, and it turned back into a rod. Ladies and gentlemen, that is nothing less than Judas Iscariot, a man, the 12th apostle. His office was turned over to Satan. The rod turned into a serpent. But the serpent must now, at the very end of his work, at the very end of Satan's work, has to go back to a man. And that is the Elijah. What's the purpose of Elijah? It's real simple. He presents truth that no man has seen before. He serves as the messenger in Malachi. He is a refiner's fire and a fuller's soap. And he is instrumental in preparing the way for the coming of Emmanuel to this earth, God with us. And when that temple is established, the temple that Yeshua will build, my Muslim brothers and sisters, you will help build it in the millennial reign. Not by violence, brothers and sisters. Violence has never, ever brought a lasting kingdom because it's based on flesh man. No, it will not be by violence, but by the King of peace. He will rule with the rod of iron, but he will be just and true and pure. That, my brothers and sisters of the Muslim faith, that, my brothers and sisters of the Christian faith, is what we long for and must have on this earth, a place of peace. Let me say some good things about the Muslims that I admire about you. You're not going to enforce them by violence, but you have qualities that will bring shame to Christians. I truly admire the way you emphasize the modest dress of women. In fact, that's one of the reasons why this professor wants to translate the curse of 1920 into Arabic, because I support that in your culture and in your ways. It is exemplary. Yeshua said to the Israelites, Sodom and Gomorrah, the people of Sodom and Gomorrah will rise up and judge you on the day of judgment, because they would have repented and you won't repent. Muslims, by your actions, will judge Christians because of the way they look, the way women are so immodest. And unfortunately, their immodesty is influencing Muslims. I applaud you. I truly admire you for your modest dress in the women, the simplicity and covering of the flesh. When Christians throughout Europe and the United States and elsewhere, they live like the world. They commit harlotry with the world. And they're woefully, woefully wrong. Another thing I admire about you, and I wrote an article about it once, called The Last Man Standing. It's about Saudi Arabia. They had not yet given women the right to vote, and I hope they never do. You see, the way of Yahweh God, Allah, is that women are not to exercise governance. That lies with the men. I love that about the Muslims. They emphasize the men. They emphasize modesty. They emphasize the man ruling. You also try to stay away from corrupt Western music and its practices. You hate homosexuality. In our country of the United States, we are so corrupted that not only is there no difference between men and women, but there is no difference between men laying with men and women laying with women. Homosexuality, it is an abomination to God. That's why I get so upset with Americans for judging you when they are so, so profoundly wrong in so many things. But both of you, you both have your faults. You know, if the Muslim didn't have such a penchant, have such a way with violence, trying to bring a kingdom by force, you would be a beautiful spectacle to behold. But your violence contradicts your morality. And then the men abuse women and rape them just because they're the enemy? Do you not see that you're nothing less than the devil himself? Inflicting pain and conflict on each other in division. You will not take the kingdom by force. It will not happen. My hope is that your eyes will be opened and that you will see that the Father is going to bring a kingdom of peace on this earth. It will not come by violence. Again, I challenge you with the test of Carmel. Who's right? Put away your violence. All your violence does is cause heartache, pain, and conflict. You have so many exemplary things. You pray 5 times a day. That is so admirable. It's good to get people to pray at a meal in America in general. You have a zeal for doing what's right. But it's like we have in the New Testament, in the book of Revelation, Yahweh said, this is what you're doing right, but I have this against you. Put away your violence and let's seek for God to come back to this earth and solve this mess. Who's right? The Jews? They're such a small minority now. Are Christians right? No, they're not. Are Muslims right? No, you're not. Is the bride right? I have a bias, and I believe we are. But I also know that Yahweh is going to have to do something to prove that I'm right. There has to be a testimony of Yahweh coming down and offering an acceptance of a particular group. And I can tell you this. If he uses this man, it's like the gentleman wrote, the Muslim men from Cairo wrote, he said, "We need someone like you to change this world to a better place for all of us." You want to summarize my goal? It's that right there. To make this world a better place for all of us. I hate the agony that this world goes through. It is difficult enough just living in life than to put up with all the temptations and the spectacle of the devil, and to put up with wrath and terror and pain inflicted on other people because they disagree with you in their religion. Folks, it's the lust of this world and the boastful pride of life. It is Cain who killed Abel from the very beginning. And you need to stop that spirit of conflict and of murder. Am I my brother's keeper? Indeed I am. It does me no good, and it does you no good. It does us no good for Cain to kill Abel. I will tell you exactly what Yahweh said before he did that. Sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must master it. Put away your wrath and your anger. Women, that same phrase, identical Hebrew phrase, was used whenever Yahweh God judged the woman, and he said, "Your desire will be for the place of your husband, and he will master you." It's the same thing. Sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must master it. Same thing. Your desire will be for the place of your husband. That's that desire. But he will master you. It's the same thing. All right. We need to add one more important thing here before we close. And it's most important and certainly most revealing. It has to do with this need for the bridge between the Muslims and the Christians. I just asked the question as to who was right. You know, is it the Jews? Is it Christians? Is it Muslims? Or is it the bride? Well, I want to share something with you now that clearly Yahweh has laid out. He's the only one who could do what I'm getting ready to share with you. This goes beyond man. Man can't do this, and plus, man doesn't even know in advance what God's doing, and he does good to even understand it after God's done something. But I trust that Yahweh has given insight to the bride to understand these things in advance and what Yahweh has done and what he will do. First, we're not going to talk about the Jews. The Jews were a type of that which was to come concerning the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God. They are not the fulfillment. And so they're here today, really, in a sense, as spectators. But the scripture tells us that they were cut off. There are really three works that we're talking about today with regard to what Yahweh God is doing concerning his spiritual fulfillment. That is the Muslims and Christians and the bride. Those are the three relevant works concerning the kingdom of heaven, the works that Yahweh is establishing to bring forth his temple. And the reality is, all three groups have an opportunity to bring forth the kingdom of heaven, or if you would, let's call it the fruits of the kingdom. So who is it going to be? Will it be the Muslims? Will it be Christians? Or will it be the bride, which is brand new on the scene at this time, really beginning in 1994? So who is going to get victory? Now, let's look at this testimony that I just spoke about, and we will lay it out, and we will look at how each of these three find their fulfillment in the works of God, and what will be their degree of success. Let me lay out the question or the issue at hand, and then we will look at each of these three groups. Here is the issue. What is the Sabbath rest? Now, of course, the Jews said it was the seventh day. The Muslims recognize that the Sabbath is the seventh day. It's the 6 days of creation, and the Sabbath rest was on the seventh day. Christians likewise, they recognize that there were 6 days of creation, and then you have the Sabbath rest. But these two groups, the Muslims and Christians, what days have they chosen to be their, quote, Sabbath, their rest day? Well, for the Muslims, they've chosen the sixth day, Friday. And we'll talk about that. And Christians have chosen the eighth day on Sunday. Why? If they both believe in 6 days of creation and Saturday is the Sabbath, why don't they have their Sabbath on Saturday and not Friday and Sunday? What's the deal? Folks, it's prophecy. It's also an opportunity for Christians and Muslims to prove if they can bring forth the fruits of the kingdom. So who's right? Is it the sixth-day Muslims or the eighth-day Christians? To tell you a little about the sixth day for the Muslims, they replace the seventh day with the sixth day of the Muslims, or Friday. As with Christians, it's a congregational gathering, if you would. The men come together primarily. And it is a time for prayer. But they also abstain from doing business on that day. It's a non-work day. In reality, it is a rest day. They don't call it a rest day, but they rest on Friday. In fact, I've heard that they take Thursday off and also Friday so that they can have a weekend Thursday and Friday. And I'm sure that depends on which country does what. But I've understood that. I think Egypt is that way. And what about Christians? Well, you know it. Most of you I'm talking to could very well be in America or over Europe and everything. You know what Christians do. Their Sabbath is the eighth day. And the question is, why the eighth day? And they say, well, that's when Yeshua resurrected from the grave or something to that effect. And so they call that their day of rest. Why? Why did they change these? Why did both groups change these days? Let me tell you why. You ready for the answer? It prophesies. Both groups were going to be given the opportunity to bring forth the fruits of the kingdom. Muslims have already had their opportunity, and we're going to look at that in a minute. And the Christians were supposed to have 3,000 years, and at the end of 3,000 years, if they were successful, then they would have entered into their Sabbath on the eighth day. Well, guess what? Yahweh knows they're going to be absolute failures, and so he has to cut the day short from 3 to 2 and come early. That's where he's going to establish the bride. The bride is the one who will reign with Emmanuel on the seventh day. We will rest from our labors because we will get out of these earthly bodies. We will enter into an immortal, incorruptible body that is born from above, being taken up into heaven, caught up into heaven. And we will come back and rule and reign with Yeshua on, guess what? On the seventh day. The Muslims had the sixth, the Christians would get the eighth, but the bride establishes its work on the seventh day, the day of rest. Well, let me give you a little information about the Muslims. Muhammad was supposedly born in Mecca around 570 AD, and he died in 632 AD. The Islamic Golden Age began around 700 AD, and it proceeded to 1200 AD, and they conquered much of the land at that time. In fact, it is called the Golden Age for a reason. They had an amazing success in conquering the land all the way from almost up to India, and included present-day Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Israel, and on into Africa. There was Egypt, Libya, Algeria, Morocco, and even northward into Spain and Portugal. So the Muslim controlled all of this area. It was an amazingly successful period for them as well. From Wikipedia, we read that the Islamic civilization gave rise to many centers of culture and science and produced notable astronomers and mathematicians and doctors and philosophers, that technology flourished, that there was investment in economic infrastructure, such as irrigation systems and canals, and the importance of reading the Quran produced a comparatively high level of literacy in the general populace. It was truly a golden age. The Muslims were extraordinarily successful starting around 700 AD all the way into 1200 AD. Starting in the 1200s and 1300s, the Mongol invasions came out of the east, and along with the loss of a great number of people through the Black Death, between the conflict and the Black Death, it greatly weakened the Islamic world. Advancing forward, in the 1400s and 1500s, the Ottoman Empire was established. By then, because of the Mongol invasion, they had lost a vast area to the east. They also lost Spain and Portugal to the west. But they advanced northward into present-day Turkey, as well as into the Bulgarian, Romanian, Serbian area west of the Black Sea. And I hope you're beginning to get a feel for what I'm talking about here. Now, let us advance forward to the 1900s. In World War I, the Ottoman Empire allied with Germany, and they suffered defeat. Following World War I, in 1918, the vast majority of former Ottoman Empire territory outside of Asia Minor was handed over to European powers. And you, of course, know the rest of the story. The Muslims were greatly diminished and were divided off into various nations, and they lost the strength that they had had through the Ottoman Empire and, of course, during the Golden Age. So, we covered a period of time from 570 with Muhammad to his death in 632, entering into the Golden Age in 700 AD, and it brought us up to World War I in the 1900s. So we ask, did they pass through that period with enduring victory and success? Did they rule after that period? Of course, the answer is no. But keep in mind the outcome of this very important, very significant period. Now, let's talk about Christianity a little bit. Has Christianity been successful for 2,000 years? The reality is, no, they have not been successful. They brought forth a kingdom, but it's a Babylonian kingdom. It commits harlotry with the world. It's a Babylonian tower that reaches up to heaven that has to be torn down. Christianity has been a failure as far as bringing forth the fruits of the kingdom. Now, they would argue with us about that, but it doesn't change the facts that they were too early. And when you got 35,000 denominations who can't agree, there's something wrong with this kingdom, especially when you look at the worldliness of the church today. So as I said, this work that is supposed to rest on the eighth day has to be cut short from 3 to 2. It's just like King Saul. King Saul, who was coronated king early, just like Christianity, Samuel told him, you will know that you're going to be king whenever 3 men come walking down the road towards you carrying 3 loaves of bread and they'll give you 2. So that's the 2,000 years of the church that is going to get the rights to the kingdom. That's the 2 loaves of leavened Pentecost bread, but they will not get the 3rd loaf, which is the 7th day, the Sabbath. If they could have been successful, they would have rested on the 8th day. but they wouldn't be successful, and Yahweh God has to cut their days short from 3 to 2. So they will never get an opportunity to rest on the 8th day because they would totally fail. So at this point, I'm going to bring a conclusion, but I'm going to add some information that you need to know. Here's the conclusion. The Muslims had their opportunity to bring forth the fruits of the kingdom. You've heard exactly what I said concerning how Yahweh raised them up, and they tried to bring forth the kingdom, and it was corrupted because it's carried out by flesh man. And so they failed. Their Sabbath, entering into rest, was on the 6th day. They failed to enter into rest. They failed to bring forth the fruits of the kingdom. Christianity will not get that opportunity because they would fail too. Yeshua himself said that if he doesn't cut the day short, no flesh will be saved. And so Christianity has to come to an end here after 2,000 years. This being said, I'm going to share something with you that, because it's just a podcast and I cannot give you a visual, it's going to be difficult, but I'm going to try to lay this out for you. You see, as presented in a video at remnantbride.org, under the title of The Kingdom of Heaven, if you go to remnantbride.org, you will see over on the right side, second row, it says The Kingdom of Heaven. You click on that, and there are 12 videos there, and there's one called Stacking Time, Cutting It Short. And it lays out in detail, and it is a video, so you can see it visually. It lays out this matter of Yahweh God actually stacking time. In brief, Yahweh stacks the 50th year on the 49th year. Why would he do that? Because Yahweh is going to delay Jubilee. He has a law concerning Jubilee. 49 years, and then a trumpet is blown, and on the 50th year, there is a Jubilee. The fact is, there was never, ever, 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 ever one Jubilee held. There was one opportunity for them to do it, but they backed out and didn't do it. The reason is because Yahweh is stacking time. He is not going to have Jubilee on man for several thousand more years. That's why Yeshua labored on the Sabbath, because Yahweh was going to stack the 8th day, if you would, on the 7th day and come and labor on the Sabbath, because it's not time for Jubilee. Jubilee will not come until all mankind enters into an immortal, incorruptible body, as well as the angels that have been corrupted, and Jubilee will not come for many thousands of years. You can understand this by going to Stacking Time, Cutting It Short. But let me tell you this. I'm just going to give you the bottom line outcome. Yeshua was crucified in 33 AD. What we find there is that was actually the end of, by stacking time, it was the end of the 4th day. You would say, oh, it was 4,000 years. No, it was not 4,000 years, because with stacking time, it was actually 3,920 years from when Adam and Eve fell. Again, go watch Stacking Time. But just keep in mind, at Yeshua's crucifixion, 33 AD, that ended the 4th day of creation. So we entered into the 5th day. That actually took us to 1013 AD. So 33 AD to 1013 AD. Now, 1013 AD, that began the 6th day. That would be 1013. Now, how does that relate to the Muslims? Well, the Muslims' golden years were from 700 to 1200. 1013 falls exactly in the middle of that period of time. So you have basically 250 years before, and then you have the beginning of the 6th day, and then you have 250 years after that. And you know the rest of the history of the Muslims. Their conquest was very, very successful. You say, why were they so successful? Well, we talked about astronomers and mathematicians and doctors and philosophers and science. They had it all. They were the ones that were the shining example on the earth. Folks, Yahweh God was blessing them. He was blessing them because that was going to be their Sabbath rest, and he was going to testify whether they could bring forth the fruits of the kingdom. That's why the Muslims were so successful in that time. They entered into their Sabbath at 10:13, and frankly, they had until 1993 to accomplish their work. That would be the sixth day from 10:13 to 1993. But guess what again? It ended. They had their chance to bring forth the kingdom. But as I've explained before, it was a work of the flesh. It doesn't matter how religious you are, how great an organization you have, flesh man will fail. And that's what the Muslims did in their sixth day rest, if you would, their holy day. They proved that they would fail, and they did. So, again, would Christianity fail? Yes, they would. But do you see that the Muslims had their opportunity to bring forth the kingdom and they failed? Now, most striking. You say, oh, so 1993 was when that period ended and it went into then the seventh day, which would be the millennial reign, the 1,000 years. Of course, it's not a literal 1,000 years because Yahweh stacks time. But 1993 was the end of the sixth day. And again, go to the video, Stacking Time, Cutting It Short. Now, it ended in 1993. Let me tell you a story, folks. First, the Muslims had their opportunity on the sixth day, and they failed. They're still fighting today. It's not going to work. They're not going to bring forth the fruits of the kingdom. Their fruits are very much so death, as the violent segments do such harm. So what happened at the end of their period of the sixth day? What happened in 1994? That was the beginning of the seventh day of the millennial reign. Guess what? In June of 1994, we had built a home for women and children. I was writing a book called Coverings. And I had a lot of questions at that time. Yahweh told me, you're getting ready to see the most incredible vista of truth you've ever seen. I guarantee you, it is absolutely incredible indeed. Because in 1994, June of 1994, the Spirit of God came upon me. He started teaching me himself. I could ask any question to the Father, to the Son, and it would be answered. In fact, it was so much. At one point, I leaned back in my chair and I said, God, don't tell me anything else. My little pea brain will not even handle it. And he showed me something. I laughed and I said, how did you get that in there? Folks, what I understand, what I know concerning the kingdom of heaven is not for man. I am not a smart man. Go look at my history on grades and you'll know it. I know what I know because the Spirit of God has revealed it to me. He tells me things. He shows me things. So isn't it quite significant that when you lay out time, the sixth day ends in 1993, and the seventh day, the millennial reign, begins in 1994. And in June, in the middle of June of 1994, the Spirit came upon me and began teaching me all of these things. And he's continued to teach me since then, and I've learned more and more and more, and we're hoping. As testified in Africa, And as testified in my life, were there three periods of 23 years? And of course, at the podcast, there are podcasts concerning 23, 23, 23. So, what can we expect for the future? The Muslims have failed. The Muslims have failed with their sixth day holy day. Really, their rest. They don't call it a Sabbath. Sabbath actually means seventh. But it is technically a Sabbath. They failed. They're still fighting today. Their period of greatness came to an end. They failed. Christianity has failed as well. There's been a Test of Carmel since 1948 between Christianity and the bride and the Jews. And that test has demonstrated that Christianity's failing. And if we have to wait until the eighth day for them to get the victory, it would be, my God, why have you forsaken us? It'll be 3 hours or 3,000 years of darkness. But what we see and what encourages us is that in 1994, the Holy Spirit came upon me and began teaching me bride. And hopefully this next year, we're going to see a powerful demonstration of what Yahweh is going to do. That the bride is the choice. Now, let's get to where we've wanted to be all along in this portion of what I've been sharing here. And that is, you have the Muslims on the sixth day. You have the bride on the seventh day. You have Christians on the eighth day. What do you have? We talked about a bridge between Muslims and Christians. Guess what? Yahweh has shown us what that bridge is. And that is the bride on the Sabbath. The seventh day. Christians rejected the seventh day and chose the eighth. Muslims rejected the seventh day and chose the sixth. The bride is being established in the seventh day Sabbath, the seventh. We receive the outpouring of the Holy Spirit. The bride becomes the bridge between the Muslims and the Christians. Do you see that? It's exactly why Muslims rested on the sixth day, Christians on the eighth, because the bride is the bridge between the two works. That's where we are in time. That, my brothers and sisters, is great hope. My Muslim brothers and sisters, do good. Don't choose wrath. Do good to all people. You have some wonderful qualities of morality concerning dress and the role of the man and the woman and not falling into sensual sins like homosexuality. Do good. Let's leave everything in the hands of Allah. And let him decide. You will not take your kingdom by force. I'm going to speak to you bluntly. I hope you're not offended. On the other hand, I hope that causes you to think. All you're doing is following in the ways of the God of this world who has the power of death. If you won't to establish a kingdom on this earth that is a glory to Allah, then don't use the ways of the serpent. And let's all unite together, accept each other, and look to the one true God to bring peace to this earth. I implore you. Amen.